You're listening to The Word from Westwood, a series of podcasts featuring sermons preached at Westwood United Methodist Church in Los Angeles, California.
Well, it was almost 40 years ago that I sat in an old upstairs Sunday school room with a small group of other young adults. We were all in our early 20s. And we were sitting there listening to the Reverend David Lee Mounts, and I really have to emphasize, it has to be said, the Reverend David Lee Mounts, who is teaching our membership class. Now, Reverend Mounts even then was a relic from another time, and most would joke that he knew John Wesley personally. Wesley was the founder of the Methodist movement in the early 18th century, if you didn't know that. And Reverend Mounts had one of those amazing speaking voices that he would use this deep kind of tremolo, you know, the old-time preachers, anytime they wanted to really emphasize a point. And you never saw Reverend Mounts in anything other than his black suit, white shirt, and black tie. I think he owned one black suit and one black tie. And then we had this set of cardboard flip charts that was on this rack. Do you know what I'm talking about? You remember some of those? That was his version of a multimedia presentation. Now, in this class, there was the usual going through Methodist history and talking a lot about a basic understanding of how the Methodist Church operates. But the culmination of the class was a discussion of what we to this day still call our membership vows, our commitment, our pledge to the local congregation, and the way that we were promising to uphold it by our prayers, our presence, our gifts, and our service. Now, taking membership vows or making membership pledges was a common practice during that era in American life. Nowadays, there are many who speak and write about the demise of the concept of membership in anything, how it is antiquated, and how it was something of a particular era and no longer speaks to modern generations. We hear all kinds of arguments about not wanting to be pinned down to organizations and to institutions because of a distrust, which at times is warranted and other times not. So I'm going to be blunt. I think it's really too bad that that is our state of affairs. And I believe it is very short-sighted in the grand scheme of things. These statements that we continue to make to this day about upholding a congregation by our prayers, our presence, our gifts, and our service are something that have deep roots within the Christian faith. The first Christians, as we heard and remember, were in covenant with each other, and they shared all of their resources for the common good. In other words, there was accountability to one another, and because of that accountability, they grew by leaps and bounds. John Wesley, when he formed his first Methodist societies, knew and understood that. And he focused in those Methodist societies on accountability structures of all things. He did that because he felt it was critically important for a person's faith to run deep. His hope was that faith for the individual would be foundational and defining, not just one other attribute among others in a person's life. Wesley was passionate about the church and about the faith community, but he was also critical of the many attitudes and the elitism that had become the norm in the Church of England at that time. He saw people who were more show than they were substance, people who rarely concerned themselves with the plight of others. He saw the church as a movement that should connect with the community around it and its needs. And he worried about the plight of the poor and the disenfranchised. He practiced what he preached, giving away most of what he earned in his lifetime, which was considerable. He yearned for people who had a faith that transformed them and the world around them. And that spirit was deeply implanted in the Methodist societies and eventually in the Methodist congregations that were created. Personal piety and I want to emphasize the active faith were the hallmarks of what it meant to be Methodist. Well, here we are, decades and decades later, living in very challenging times where division and mistrust run rampant. We wonder if our institutions have failed us, and the church as an institution has not escaped this criticism. There is truth to the critique of a sometimes moribund institution. The source of that attitude, I believe, especially in this country, is that there is indeed a brand of Christianity that has become much more self-serving than it is outwardly focused. So it is not a surprise, at least not to me, that many no longer take the church and its mission very seriously. But we gathered here obviously have a bias, or we wouldn't be here, right? We're here because we believe that church is relevant, probably more relevant than ever for the time and the place in which we now live. What is needed, however, is not just a regular kind of Christianity. Instead, what we really need is a kind of Christianity for this day and this time that asks us to dig deep within ourselves so that it becomes totally, totally ingrained in our lives. Last week, we talked about a vision of deep Christianity, particularly for this congregation, and we used the words inclusive and vibrant. This week, I would like us to consider what it means if we are engaged and generous. Engaged and generous. Wesley's view of the church and the promises of which we spoke, the prayers, the presence, the gifts, and the service, are all about an engaged and generous kind of Christian faith. So, of course, we're probably thinking now, what does engaged and what does generous mean for the place where we find ourselves? Well, I would ask some questions. What are the things about which you are most passionate? How are you engaged with them? Is our faith one of those deep passions? Or perhaps would we yearn for our faith to become one of those deep passions? What does engagement look like in the faith community? Well, deep engagement at a very basal level means that we are present. Community is only created when people participate, when people see and interact with one another. A deep faith is one which is cultivated by giving attendance to worship and study and fellowship and service. Our Methodist way is one which professes a deep spirituality that is ultimately expressed by our service to other people. The church community is to be both that place to experience God's well of living water, but it is also called to be the mobilization point to address the hurts and the hopes of the community that surrounds it. You see, piety by itself is self-centered. Service by itself can end up rudderless. So what does that mean for all of us here at Westwood? Well, I believe that our robustness as a congregation in the future is dependent on just how passionate we are about participating in worship, growing in our spiritual practices, and giving hands-on service to our community. The challenge, of course, is that it involves decision-making and it involves commitment, especially when it comes to our time. The challenge is that this deep faith for which I believe we yearn is not something that just happens to us. We can't turn on a tape and just listen and go to sleep and think that by some strange osmosis we're going to become a person of deep faith. Deep faith requires cultivation. And that cultivation requires our time and our energy. So when we look at our lives, friends, is our practice consistent with our desire? If our goal as individuals and as a congregation is a deeply engaged faith. Does our practice align with our goal? Is worship a regular event or is it a once-in-a-while occurrence? Are spiritual practices and Bible studies aspirations, or are they instead an actual part of weekly life? Do we serve the world through the church or a community agency once in a while, or maybe with a check, or instead are we there being a regular, passionate volunteer for the important ministry that takes place? Engaged. Engaged. The other area we're considering, and what is needed for a dynamic personal faith as well as a dynamic congregation, is a spirit of generosity. Healthy Christian communities are generous communities. They have a genetic code where generosity in the giving of our time and a generosity in the giving of personal resources is a dominant trait. The question that is presented to each of us is, do we operate out of this great sense of abundance, or are we operating out of scarcity? Many ask the question, why give either my time or my treasure? Well, my response to that would be, because it is who we are. And it is who we have always been. And it is who we need to be for the future. You see, generous people are not focused on scarcity. They are focused on abundance. Generous people are not captive to fear. They live in hope. Generous people always seem to find the time, and they always seem to find a way. In other words, it is an attitude. An attitude that we cultivate, and an attitude that yields blessings for others. And as a side benefit, we know that our lives have meaning and purpose because we're making a difference. You see, friends, generous people believe in a generous God. I read a story the other day about a woman named Lisa Bain who comes out of Tulsa, Oklahoma. A few years ago, she was diagnosed both with celiac disease and spondyloarthritis all at the same time. And the avid runner was told by her doctors that she needed to hang up her running shoes. The same week, her mother was diagnosed with ovarian cancer. And she said, as I sat by the bedside of my mother, after telling her that she had cancer and that I had also received bad news on my end, we started laughing. Bain said her reply was, "Well, isn't this just a hoot?" Well, at that moment, we decided that we were going to make this the journey of our lives, and we were going to make it about laughter, about joy, and about helping others through their tough journey. So these two women made a commitment to embody joy throughout their struggle and throughout chemotherapy. So they got people's attention by going to chemotherapy wearing chicken suits and party hats, realizing that many other chemo patients could use a dose of laughter and joy. And they were also inspired by Bain's English bulldog that was named Mavis Pearl. Can you imagine a bulldog named Mavis Pearl? And the two started what they call, and exist to this day, friends, the Mavis Pearl Project. Mavis Pearl, you see, is a certified therapy dog, and everywhere she goes, she sports a pink wig and a tutu on the dog. And Bain said she has a very special way of making people laugh. Well, they started collecting donations from friends, and all of a sudden they were collecting donations from corporations and others who heard about their project to produce Mavis Pearl look-alike stuffed dogs to give out to patients. And so they started making monthly deliveries to the Tulsa Cancer Institute to give each patient who is receiving treatment a Mavis Pearl stuffed dog, as well as taking the real Mavis Pearl to visit each patient. And they said it's a special time, and the patient always comments about how wonderful it is to have a moment to think about something other than cancer and to laugh. And they said, we send each dog off with a prayer and a blessing. Not unlike our prayer shawls, but we have prayer bulldogs in this case. And she said the miracle stories they hear about have never stopped. And since then, they have launched a nonprofit corporation they call Joy in the Cause, which is going strong, and now the Mavis Pearl Dogs are going around the world. They've become an international project. Friends, that's an example of what two people did who were engaged, who were faithful, and knew that they were supported by God's Spirit. They were engaged. Yeah, they're generous. I believe that the nurture of a vibrant community can be that place. The church can be that place that helps people like Lisa and her mother find purpose and find mission and learn how to become people of great generosities. For all of its flaws, I believe that the church is the best place to grow in and to express our Christian faith. And that is why so many continue to dedicate their lives to this task and this mission. You see, I do not believe in solitary religion because Jesus called us to be in community. He did not call us to be in isolation. And faith community is about people growing and working together. Rugged individualism is not our core value. And maybe that's why it is at odds with the culture that is about self and acquisition and personal fulfillment above all else. Christian community, vibrant churches teach us to look beyond ourselves and to imagine how we can be a part of God's grace at work in this world. That spirit was articulated by John Wesley this way. Do all the good you can, by all the means you can, in all the ways you can, in all the places you can, at all the times you can, to all the people you can, as long as ever you can. Friends, our vision here at Westwood is to be a church that is inclusive, welcoming all of God's family, a church that is vibrant, where people are passionate about their faith, a community that is engaged, where members and friends are encouraged in their individual ministries and service, a place where generous people support the work of this parish and the work beyond. The letter to James said that faith without works is dead. My prayer is that this is a place that is alive and is known for a very simple fact, that it made a difference. What do you think? Amen.
Westwood United Methodist Church is located at 10497 Wilshire Boulevard in Los Angeles, between Westwood Village and Beverly Hills. Sundays are at the heart of this faith community's life, and we invite you to worship every Sunday at 10 a.m. A wide variety of opportunities for all ages are also available every week. To learn more, visit us on the web at www.westwoodumc.org or call the church office at area code 310-474-4511. I'm Janet Hoskins. Westwood United Methodist Church. Do justice, love kindness, walk humbly with God.